Hi all, this is Matt. It is November the 17th, 2016, which means that it's a little over a week since the US elections. I wrote a post that I'm pretty proud of before about, too long didn't read, is that there are 59 million people, 60 million people that voted for Trump. And in the wake of that election, part of me wanted to blame, vilify, dehumanize those other 60 million people. And that's not okay. So it was, hopefully being honest with our disappointment and frustrations and also acknowledging that we can't just other, such a huge percentage of the population. That's not the way forward if we want to move this whole human enterprise forward. So this one is also musings, ramblings, post-election, but I think it's in a little bit of a different direction. This one is entitled Glass Jaw. I want you to picture a boxer on the mat, bewildered. There's an unidentifiable hum of noise all around, and there's blurring lights coming in and out of focus above. The fighter knows that he has to get up as soon as he can figure out which way is up. Now, I've played a lot of different sports, but I was never a boxer, and I've only ever been in a handful of fights. But I'm well aware of what being completely blindsided by a hit feels like. Here is a truer and much less sexy story than that cliched sports analogy. 2 weeks ago, I was carrying out way too much recycling, like 3 trips worth of recycling, and so much that my arms were full. And I was kind of holding, how you hold things in place, like a pile in place with, you got things in your hands and things in your arms, and then like your chin becomes like the keystone, like that linchpin at the top to kind of hold this mass close to your body. So I couldn't see anything. I couldn't see my feet, and I slipped and I fell hard. And because I couldn't see anything, my entire body goes crashing to the ground. I wasn't able to see the ground coming to meet me, unable to brace my fall. It all happened so quickly. I wasn't able to do anything but temporarily leave my body right after, as everything hurt and every other sense was temporarily dulled. Thankfully, I was completely alone for this. So now it's my secret shame that I'm sharing with all of you. Now, I don't know if you've ever been a boxer or a fighter, and I don't know if you've ever fallen flat on your face while taking in one trip what should have taken you 2 or 3. But I'm willing to bet that you're familiar with this experience, right? This hit out of the blue, unexpected. And last Tuesday night, I and others like me, we took the worst kind of punch, the worst kind of hit, the one you don't see coming. This experience, this unexpected, unguarded hit to the head, this is the metaphor I've been drawn to in the aftermath of this US election. Rob Bell, who I'm a huge fan of, he has a wonderful podcast, by the way, that you need to check out with Pete Rollins and him kind of discussing post-election stuff. He likened left-leaning people and media pundits after the election to meat sacks, just wandering around, disembodied, staggering, like our boxer on the mat, like people you see on the news footage after a nearby catastrophic event. But here, I feel like I need to dial it back a little bit, right? This is an election, not a nearby bombing, right? And I live in an entirely different country, right? I'm a man, a white man. I'm not a woman, a Latino, a Muslim, an African American, a member of the LGBT community, or any of the many other population groups that Trump has actively attacked or othered. But still, it feels like the hit just connected that hard. And with every new emboldened hate crime that we read about, and every new appointment of a climate change denier or a white supremacist, like, come on, the hits just keep coming. A whole country over, I am still staggering and trying to clear my head. And I'm not alone. Now, this is a pretty common experience amongst those who hoped or thought that the Democrats would be successful. Everyone expecting that outcome took a hit. But after that staggering blow, the responses have been varied and we lose some commonality. Some are already up and fighting. Some are staggering and falling over themselves trying to get up. And some are still on the mat. The ones I consider to still be on the mat are the ones that are hopeless. That's not a knock at them. I'm not saying, oh, they're hopeless. I'm saying, like, literally, in a lot of ways, they're devoid of hope. They don't see a reason to believe that things will get better if they get up. When I look around, I see a lot of lost hope. And hopeless looks like a lot of things. A lot of what I read online has this edge of cynical resignation. A lot of it is really dark humor. A lot of it looks like hunkering down for the next 4 to 8 years. It looks like relocating to Canada, which, you know, come on up, we're awesome. No. But really, you know, it's this we need to just escape, right? So the question is, why are some people hopeless while others are already back up on their feet and fighting? Where does hope come from? Now, you all know if you know me, if you've listened or read any of these blog posts, you know that I'm a huge fan of Brené Brown's work. In her research, she uncovered that an individual's hope was not a byproduct of good socioeconomic status, like we might expect, but rather one of resilience. So she found that children who had faced adversity and overcome, which also includes, by the way, losing and learning, those who had been in adversity, they were more hopeful in times of challenge. They were more able to embody hope, not out of naivety, but through hard-won experience. And they were also notably more hopeful than children whose parents had sheltered them from all conflict. Now, in boxing, getting back to our boxing metaphor, there's a term that I've always been intrigued by, which is the glass jaw, the boxer who can't take a hit. The notion that somebody could be the biggest, the leanest, the meanest looking mother, but if they couldn't take a hit, a good hit, and keep going, they were considered to have a glass jaw. And alternatively, a boxer who might not be as big or fast or long a reach, they could still gain an unexpected victory by the simple virtue of being able to hang in there longer. I think this past election has shown us that a lot of us left-leaning social progressives have glass jaws. I know I certainly do. And I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that a lot of us are amateur activists. This might be especially true if we inhabit a place of power and privilege, because just like the sheltered kid in Brené Brown's research, we haven't had as much experience with getting knocked around, getting knocked down, or getting back up. Online angst and activity often feels like a whole lot more than it is, right? I could spend all day on Twitter and get nothing accomplished. I've cast my lot in with the left. I've shared stories about Trump's horrific claims or hilarious missteps. I've retweeted clever articles and quotes and memes. And if I spend enough time listening and quoting and retweeting and even writing about advocates and activists, I might actually believe that I am one. And in a way, you know, I feel like I am. I take this blog seriously, despite the handful of people following it. Thank you. Thank you, by the way. I appreciate it. I do believe that the mind is shaped by beautiful questions and that wisdom is gained by listening to wise teachers wherever you find them in life. And I think that at its best, Twitter and Facebook can connect us with those who are far away, and actually serve as a method for disseminating knowledge worth sharing. But of course, all of this can be done from the comfort of my couch. It is cynically labeled slacktivism for a reason. With all the race charge rhetoric of this past election and ongoing daily now, I've been drawn to the stories of the 1960s civil rights movement. On Being, that I'm also a fan of, has recently been highlighting interviews with some of these great leaders and thinkers. And as we look for wisdom in our current social climate, they have a lot to say to us. One of these leaders is John Lewis, and he is currently a U.S. congressman from Georgia. He was a civil rights leader with Martin Luther King Jr., and he relates how, in preparation for any march or any ride or event, the activists would meet and study together. Here are his words. A small group of students every Tuesday night at 6:30 would gather in a small Methodist church. We had a teacher who taught us the philosophy and discipline of nonviolence. We studied Gandhi and what Gandhi attempted to do in South Africa, what he accomplished in India. We studied Thoreau and civil disobedience. We studied the great religions of the world. And before we even discussed the possibility of a sit-in, we had role-playing. We had what we called social drama, and we'd act out. There would be black and white young people, students, interracial groups, playing the roles of African Americans, or be in an interracial group playing the roles of whites. And we went through the motions of someone harassing you, calling you out, pulling you out of your seat, pulling your chair from under you, kicking you, or pretending to spit on you. Sometimes we did actually pour cold water on someone, never hot, but we went through the motion. End quote. Now that, it's inspiring, isn't it? That is preparation. That is a tilt. That is a fight. In another interview, the late Vincent Harding, who was also a civil rights leader, also a friend of Martin Luther King Jr.'s and a speechwriter for him, relates how many of the same civil rights activists that he had marched with were still growing strong, still fighting hard, ever resilient, these 50-some years later. He also reminds the listener that even though we might find obvious racism and xenophobia shocking, that when it comes to multiracial, multi-ethnic, multi-religious democratic society, we are still a developing nation. His words. And I think many of us, if we're being honest, are developing activists. And that's okay, right? Let's start with acceptance. We'll get there. I'm afraid that we'll have lots of challenges and chances to practice. We'll ask forgiveness for not stepping into the ring earlier. But let's also acknowledge that we are newbies. We're the unexperienced. We, the inexperienced, we are the glass jaws. So let's be humble and look for the heavyweights, those who have cared and fought for years, who can point us into the effective directions, who can show us how to leverage our privilege, and who can pick us up when we get knocked down ourselves. I'm glad that we have some small notion of what it means to get knocked down, to feel powerless, to want to fight. Because now we can actually get back up. We can shake it off. Now we keep fighting. Because if you keep getting back up, and you keep getting back up, they don't call you a glass jaw. When you keep getting back up, they just call you a fighter. I hope you're well. I hope you enjoyed the post. Let me know in the comments any questions, concerns, or encouragement. Thanks, guys.